20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can get all your Pack-A-Day updates by following us on Twitter at Pack-A-Day Podcast. And remember, you can always subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Spotify. And of course, you can always check us out over at CheeseheadTV.com. I'm Kyle Fellows, and I am joined by my co-host, Andrew Mertig. We're back for another Friday edition of the podcast. How you doing, Andrew?
Great. It's really great to be back. I hadn't missed the show in a really, really long time.
Yeah.
But I was in Las Vegas for just with some friends watching the men's March Madness opening two rounds, and that was awesome. It was a really great time, and I came back, and now I'm just super excited to break this Aaron Rodgers news tonight, right? Because it finally happened. Finally, please tell me it finally happened.
It hasn't yet. We're not there yet. We missed you last week, though. We gave you a little bit of trouble.
I heard.
Yeah, you for whatever reason, actually listened to the podcast. We didn't know that you would do that. But Andrew very, very, very rarely misses a show. So when he does, we give him a hard time. But as you said, no Aaron Rodgers news yet. It felt like for a while it was going to get there, you know, slowly progressing towards that. Now it just feels like, we don't know when that's ever going to happen. But although I will say Adam Schefter did say that talks between the Packers and Jets have stalled, so that's exciting. Saying that the Packers still want pick 13 and more is what was stated. But for now, we will just keep waiting. But we did get some edge rusher news on Thursday, Andrew. First, it was reported that the Packers have agreed to a one-year, $1.2 million deal with edge rusher Justin Hollins, who was with the team last year, joined them late in the campaign. He proved to be a valuable depth piece for this defense, and once Rashawn Gary is healthy, he'll probably be your fourth edge rusher behind Gary, Preston, and Enagbare. So, Andrew, what do you think? Do you like this idea of bringing back someone like Justin Hollins to this team for 2023?
Yeah, well, I really loved when the Packers acquired Hollins, and like my philosophy is always, why not kick the tires on a former high draft pick during a season that at the time seemed completely lost?
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty impressed with him. You know, you never know. Maybe it's just not going to work out in Green Bay, and you know, what have you wasted? Mm-hmm. One roster spot for a few weeks. But I thought he played really well, and to keep a guy who can be your fourth edge, provide some special teams value, and then also just be a veteran presence in that position room for $1.2 million. I'll take that. I'll do that all day long. And especially when you consider Rashawn may not be back 100% early in the season. So you get that vet that's going to help alleviate some pressure from a potential rookie addition at the edge position for Green Bay. And, you know, speaking of potential rookie edge rushers, I think we have some news about one.
Yes, the other news that we got on Thursday, nice transition there, was also edge rusher related, of course. The Packers hosted Iowa State edge rusher Will McDonald on a top 30 visit. So that comes on the heels of the Packers, specifically Brian Gutekunst, attending the Iowa State Pro Day this week as well. So as they say, sometimes where there's smoke, there's also fire. McDonald is not what the Packers typically target at the edge position. He's a bit light for their liking. He's 6'4 and 239 pounds at the combine. I know I saw this somewhere, and so I could be wrong, but I know he was sick at the combine, so there were reports that maybe that weight was a little low. I want to say I saw somewhere that he was up to 246, but I could not find that for the life of me today. So somebody find that, tweet at me. I'd appreciate that because I know I'm not crazy, or I could be. But he also has 35-inch arms, so he's a really, really long player, and he boasts a 9.72 RAS. So a really impressive athlete, which absolutely screams Packers. But he is also an older prospect. We saw the Packers throw that out the window last year when they selected Devontae Wyatt in the first round. But McDonald will almost be 24 years old on draft night, so getting a little bit old. And Andrew, I haven't watched him closely yet. I've seen some highlights. I've watched some interviews. He's literally on my list to dig into this weekend. He's next. But I know you've gotten to his tape already. So what are your thoughts? And where do you think the Packers might be interested in selecting someone like Will McDonald?
Yeah, McDonald's pretty far down on my list. He's something like edge 22 on film grade, but I think he can move up from there with a, you know, his athletic testing is definitely going to shoot him up the board. So he's definitely going to be higher than 22. But the weird thing about that is even at 22, this edge class is so incredibly good. Edge 22 is probably still going to be like a third round grade for me. That being said, a lot of people like Will McDonald more than me, so he probably does go something like round two. I know pick 45 has been a popular mock draft destination for Will McDonald amongst Packer fans. So these are the notes that I had. So, you know, Will McDonald the fourth, he really nice length and burst. Glad I got that right. Right. 35 inch R's and the athletic testing. So I caught that on tape. He's a pass rush first player, plays really hard, uses length and leverage to win. He has a nice first step. He's not super refined in his moves if he doesn't win initially. Has a lack of strength at the point of attack. He'll get pushed around a bit. I think he starts his career as a third down guy with the hope that he can add some weight and strength and be more effective early. And I think, you know, if the Packers are looking for more of a pass rushing specialist, McDonald's an intriguing option that can come down, play third downs right away, potentially in place of Rashawn Gary early in the season. And then you can, you know, hopefully develop him into a little bit more of a stout run defender. But you already have some of those types of players in the Packers edge room.
Yeah, he's going to be a really intriguing name because he is so different than what the Packers have in their edge rush room right now. And certainly a name to keep an eye on now that he has multiple connections to Green Bay throughout the process so far. But one last quick note of newsworthy note here is that Adrian Amos was in Baltimore visiting the Ravens this week. Of course, that's his hometown. So I'm sure there's some interest from him to go home, especially as he ends, you know, the end of his career here. The next contract may be his last. But obviously the Packers have a need at safety, and we're not exactly sure what that's going to look like going forward. And it could be that Amos still has too strong of a market for the Packers to want to bring him back at what he could get paid. But we'll see. We just saw Justin Hollins visit the Giants and then pretty much immediately return to Green Bay. So we'll see what happens with Adrian Amos. Maybe we get some news here one way or the other in the next couple of days.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there, right? Hometown opportunity. I'm sure that would be a pretty cool chance for Adrian Amos to play there. And, you know, after Penn State, really kind of staying in that general vicinity of the country, a chance to return home. And Amos had kind of a down year last year. I think he had some peaks and valleys, but, you know, hoping that he gets a really good opportunity. If it's not in Green Bay, I think Baltimore is the perfect place for him to go. We've seen time and time again the Ravens kind of rejuvenate a veteran's career. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think Amos definitely could be on track for a really big bounce back year. Mm-hmm. Maybe he can go in there, mentor Kyle Hamilton a little bit. And I think that would be a really cool opportunity. So we'll see. Amos is certainly given the Packers a whole heck of a lot to appreciate in the last 4 years. So just wishing him the best of luck, regardless of where he goes. And so that is all of the updates. That was kind of a lot for today, given that we have no news on the Packers quarterback situation. But while we're waiting for all of that, we wanted to recap what has been going on in free agency around the NFC North. So if you are all at all like me, you can't really keep up with all of the craziness that surrounds like 2 to 3 days of nonstop NFL news. And then sometimes I don't realize the aggregate of all of the changes that have happened until we start to break down the rosters in June. You know, Kyle and I have been doing a series, and last year, Kyle, Maggie, and myself did a series where we kind of break down all of the changes that have happened. But I think it's nice to just take a pause, see where we are in free agency around the North. And then it helps us to preview the draft because needs have changed, team situations have changed. So let's just take a lap around the division rivals, see how things are setting up for them leading into the draft. Kyle, why don't you get us started with the Lions?
Yeah, Detroit has done some really nice things the last couple weeks, and they've been able to make some good signings. I've been really impressed with the way that they've just kind of morphed this roster the last couple of years. And they started with Cameron Sutton on a 3-year deal, $33 million coming over from the Steelers. Running back David Montgomery joins them from the Bears. They got C.J. Gardner Johnson from the Eagles, after he wasn't able to end up back there, after kind of maybe misjudging the market, gets a one-year deal with the Lions. Cornerback Emmanuel Mosley comes over from San Francisco, and guard Graham Glasgow comes over as well. So some nice additions there. They re-signed linebacker Alex Anzalone. Defensive end John Kaminsky is back. Kicker Michael Badgley back, as well as tackle Matt Nelson. Some guys who left Detroit, Deshaun Elliott, the safety, running back Jamal Williams, Packer fan favorite, heads to the Saints. Guard Evan Brown is gone. Cornerback Mike Hughes, cornerback Amani Aruarie actually just went to the Giants today. He was on the list of unsigned guys, but he just joined the Giants. Unsigned guys remaining out there, DJ Chark still hanging out there. Defensive tackle Michael Brockers, linebacker Gerard Davis, tackle Dan Skipper, and defensive end Austin Bryant.
Yeah, so I don't think this is particularly controversial to say, but I feel like the Lions have had the best offseason so far in the NFC North. And I would go even a step further and say they very well may be the favorite in the division heading into the season. They really didn't lose that much. Jamal Williams, of course, great locker room guy, super highly productive at the goal line. But it's kind of hard to argue that David Montgomery isn't a better overall player. The secondary should be so much better with Mosley and Sutton at cornerback. And then, as you mentioned, CJ Gardner-Johnson at safety slash slot. So if they can add another pass rusher in the draft, they are going to see the improvement on defense they needed to match the offensive firepower they had last year. Now, did they overachieve on offense last season? Yeah, I mean, maybe a little, but this is still shaping up to be a team with playoff expectations. And add on, they're going to get to pick at 6 and 18 in a month, which should help improve their roster even more.
And they basically get a first-round wide receiver in Jameson Williams that will be like they have a third first-round pick. So just a ton of talent coming to this team. But I think the biggest takeaway has to be the improvement in the secondary, like you said. And when you play in a division that has Christian Watson, now DJ Moore, and of course Justin Jefferson, you need that reliable secondary. So you hate that you like it so much, but Detroit is making some good moves, and they're smart moves too, right? They're not just throwing money around. They seem committed to doing things the right way here. So you hate that you love it for Detroit, but they're doing some good things. But let's flip over to the Minnesota Vikings, where maybe we can like things a little bit less. I don't know.
For sure. So the Vikings made a few signings. One was tight end Josh Oliver for 3 years, $21 million. I didn't freeze there, Kyle.
I thought that was a typo the first time I saw it in the show doc. I saw the signing initially, but I had forgotten about what they paid him. So
I don't know how the deal is structured, but I certainly hope for their sake they can get out of it early.
Is this
the deal that $21 million for Josh Oliver?
Is this the deal that ruined the market for Dalton Schultz? Is this the one that was like, what in the world is going on? Like, I don't know. That's crazy.
Some of these contracts don't make a ton of sense to me. They did sign cornerback Byron Murphy from the Cardinals, kind of a slot specialist, but a pretty nice young corner. Defensive end Marcus Davenport, who follows me on Twitter, they got for a one-year deal. And then Packer legend Dean Lowry to play on the defensive line. They did re-sign center Garrett Bradbury, which I'm sure makes Kenny Clark very happy. Running back Alexander Mattison returned, which was a huge surprise to me. I thought Mattison would go start somewhere.
Exactly.
Kicker Greg Joseph, and then also defensive end Jonathan Bullard. Some players that have signed elsewhere. We got linebacker Eric Kendricks to the Chargers. Defense lineman Delvin Tomlinson to the Browns, wide receiver Adam Thielen to the Panthers, cornerback Patrick Peterson to the Steelers, and some of the free agents that remain unsigned, just a sampling here, cornerback Shannon Sullivan, tight end Irv Smith, cornerback Chris Boyd.
All right, real quick, before I give you my reaction to that list, is Irv Smith interesting to you as a free agent at all? Like, where?
Yeah, on a minimum contract, absolutely. I wouldn't be in the market of like paying him more than that. But how many tight ends do we see? Like really athletic tight ends that just take a little while to figure it out, and they look better in their second stop or in their second contract than they did in their first. And you, I give you all the credit in the world, because you're the one that pointed this out when the Vikings drafted Irv Smith, that he would be the exception to the rule. Somebody of his size profile has just never succeeded. But I think, you know, you could get him in an offense that's a little bit more creative. I'm thinking maybe even like an H-back kind of role.
Yeah.
Like, could he be a B-minus Kyle Juszczyk somewhere?
Yeah,
like,
maybe.
Maybe he could just be like, maybe he starts, you know, turning into a solid tight end. But yeah, if you're going to take a chance on somebody, that's exactly the kind of player I want to take a chance on.
He's always been interesting to me, because when he came out, I really, really liked him. But when I got in, I wouldn't say analytics, because it's not that serious. But when you start looking at all the comparative athletes in the NFL, we talked about exactly what you said, that like, there's just, I think he's 6'2 and a half or something. It's just, there's not that big of a hit rate for guys that height. But he's incredibly talented. He's a great pass catcher. And I do wonder what his market is and what he's going to cost. And obviously the Packers have a little bit of a need at tight end. And if he's like your second or third option, I feel like that could be really fun in an offense, especially with the creativity that Matt LaFleur has shown at times. So anyway, I just want to bounce that off you and see what you thought. But I guess when I'm thinking about this Minnesota team and what they've done here, the exodus of talent from Minnesota, it's kind of staggering, honestly. I like the Byron Murphy addition. I feel like they've been kind of stuck between drafting corners and paying aging vets like Patrick Peterson for a while now. The draft picks haven't always hit. Murphy should give them a really good, young, reliable player. Outside of that move, though, I don't know. This story is all about the departures. It's Eric Kendricks and Adam Thielen. They were pieces of this roster for a long, long time. Dalvin Tomlinson is a stud, and to see him walk out the door is a tough pill to swallow for this team, I'm sure, and for a team that just won the division, right? They've just gotten past the Green Bay Packers, finally, right? It almost feels like the Vikings kind of know that they're a significant regression candidate in 2023. And maybe, honestly, they're just kind of being realistic and smart about it, and they're not trying to force the issue by keeping the band together and trying to, you know, just run it back. It feels like the Vikings kind of missed their winning window and now kind of find themselves in at least a retool, if not a rebuild, kind of a mode. They've got a decent amount of holes to fill now, right? These guys are leaving. They had holes before. And they have the big contract coming up for Justin Jefferson. So I think that seriously limits the spending. And I think we saw that impact this offseason, where they're just not sure how far that they can, you know, overextend themselves when they know that they have that big contract coming up. But let's go ahead and flip things over here to the Chicago Bears, who had a busy offseason themselves, because they had a ton of money to spend, Andrew, and they made some moves. They signed linebacker Tremaine Edmonds to a four-year, $72 million contract. Guard Nate Davis. They got defensive end DeMarcus Walker, linebacker T.J. Edwards. So two big linebacker additions. Quarterback Philip Walker. I have no idea who that is, Andrew. Running back Travis Homer. Running back Deontay Foreman comes up from Carolina. Tight end Robert Tonyan, we're familiar with. Defensive tackle Andrew Billings. They didn't re-sign anyone, Andrew. There is not a single player that I'm aware of that was leaving town that they made an effort to bring back. So this is a front office that is churning this roster. They're not bringing back any of these guys. They're letting them move on. Signed elsewhere, Nicholas Morrow goes to the Eagles. Tackle Riley Reiff goes to the Patriots. Running back David Montgomery, of course, we just talked about, goes to the Lions. There are still 20 players for the Chicago Bears team that are still out there as unsigned free agents, highlighted by guys like Byron Pringle and some other guys here who Angelo Blackson, some guys that are not A-list names. So they are, like I said, churning the roster, and this is becoming a new team.
I see you declined to try to pronounce El-Kadeen Muhammad.
Shut up.
Kudos to you.
Yeah. I was scared by
But no, before I analyze the Bears offseason, I have a serious question for you. You don't know who Philip Walker is from the Panthers, the quarterback? No, he started several games in the last few years.
PJ Walker.
Did I write? Who's Philip?
Who the heck is Philip Walker? No, P.J. Walker. P.J. Walker's kind of good.
P.J. Walker?
Yeah.
Did I read Philip? I don't know, man.
Who the heck is Philip Walker?
All right.
We'll talk
about
that.
We're going to do a little research here live on the air and try to figure out how I screwed that. No, he's listed as Philip Walker on SpotTrack. I know. I copied it directly, and he is listed as that. So PJ, apparently, the P and PJ stands
PJ
for
PJ and I are on first name basis.
Now we figured out.
PJ.
Now we figured out what the problem is here. So anyways, back to the Bears. We discussed what this team might look like heading into the offseason. We made some projections. I think we were relatively close for the direction they headed. We knew they weren't going to lose anyone of note unless they didn't want David Montgomery back. And it looks like that absolutely was the case, that they didn't want David Montgomery back. So I'm just very confused why they chose to spend huge at linebacker. In some ways, I get it. Eberflus, coming from Indy, he had Shaquille Leonard, he had the other linebacker. People are going to be really angry at me that I can't remember his name. He just signed elsewhere in free agency. They had good linebackers there. The Eagles have kind of demonstrated this model of having like good three down linebackers. And so maybe linebacker is not this like set aside position anymore. Maybe it's starting to become a little bit more appreciated. I wouldn't go as far as saying a premium position, but you know, like who they signed is tough for me. Edmonds is a really nice player, though admittedly, he's more well-regarded based on his draft status than his actual performance in Buffalo. He wasn't as good as Matt Milano last year. And like, he is a very good linebacker, but they also just traded Roquan Smith and then paid his replacement, who is probably a slight step down in fairness, really similar money.
Right.
And I really like TJ Edwards. Trust me, former Badger, of course I like him. But to splash the cash at linebacker is just kind of weird to me, given what this team needs. DeMarcus Walker, Andrew Billings, really nice depth on the defensive line. I think Nate Davis is a solid guard. He's a guy that you're going to be able to plug in and be a starter. He'll help immediately. I really like Dante Foreman as a potential Montgomery replacement at a fraction of the cost. That's a nice move. But I think the failure to address offensive line outside of Davis has to be viewed as a failure. Like, I get it. You went out. You got DJ Moore. You have a plethora of future draft picks. That's going to help make up for it a little bit. But the Bears, despite having picks 9, 53, and 61 in April's draft, I think they should have gone after some veteran offensive line help because even if they draft a rookie at 9, okay, let's assume, and this is not always the case, that they're ready to start immediately. We've seen some rookie offensive linemen, Charles Cross, great example. They step in, they're a plug and play starter. You don't have to worry about them. Some take a little time to develop. I just don't know that you can go into this year assuming you're going to have like two rookie starters. And this is supposed to be Justin Fields' like prove it year.
Yeah.
So I was confused by those moves. I'm not saying they didn't get better. The Bears got a lot better. They still have some money to spend. They still have some really good draft capital. Obviously, going forward, they're going to have a ton of draft capital, and all of that's very nice. But how much is this hurting Justin Fields' progression right now?
Yeah, I'm with you here. I have several people that have mentioned the money that Chicago is paying out for this group of free agency they've acquired. They're just kind of confused about where they put the money, honestly. Compared with the talent that they acquired, the money just doesn't seem to stack up. They spent big in some areas, but I don't know that they got a ton better. I think, like you said, DJ Moore is a huge add, but that was a trade, not the free agent acquisition. I just kind of wonder if maybe Chicago just isn't that attractive of a free agency location yet, because, of course, you consider field conditions, you consider the weather, and maybe players feeling like the Bears are just still a couple years away. I don't know. I'm just speculating, trying to figure it out, because the name that I just pulled up was Mike McGlinchey, was the one that everybody thought had a good chance to go to Chicago. It was rumored on the opening day, opening bell of free agency, that he was close to going to Chicago. And then Denver jumped in and signed him. And you just kind of wonder, did they not have a plan B? Because it felt like, I have a couple friends who are Chicago Bears fans, forgive me, but they just they assumed that that was going to be the thing. Like, they were not going to leave free agency without an impact offensive lineman to help them out. So interesting. I don't know. I don't know that it makes sense for sure. But I don't know that a lot that they did here changed the trajectory of the team outside of DJ Moore. I just don't feel like it did.
Yeah. And then, I mean, you take a look and the Steelers signed Eagles guard Isaac Seumalo to a 3-year, $24 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good contract for a really good guard.
Yeah.
And like the idea that the Bears, you know, who have so much cap room or had so much cap room coming in the offseason, couldn't go out and get a guy like that. It just boggles my mind. Like I would go out and sign at least three veteran offensive linemen to protect my guy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, use your draft picks if you want to even boost that. But I just felt like the Bears had a ton of need there, and they sort of ignored it in an effort to improve their defense, which also is very needed, but an interesting strategy. So we'll see how that one plays out. So that is what the NFC North has done in free agency thus far. So I thought it would be fun. The Packers have not done much. We talked about a little bit of what they've done, a lot of re-signings, but they do have a little bit of cap space with or without the Aaron Rodgers contract. And so I wanted to ask you if there's one reasonably priced free agent you think the Packers should go after. And who you would choose in that. And I'm going to say guard Dalton Risner from Denver. And this is a guy who was a huge draft crush, many across the Cheesehead scouting community. And he's been good. Not great, but good. He started 61 games in 4 years for the Broncos. I think, quite honestly, he was expecting a really big payday. But the early run in offensive linemen has not continued after the tampering period. So Risner will likely have to settle for a one-year contract at a relatively middling payday. Let's say maybe he's looking at like a one-year, $6 million-ish kind of contract, when he was probably expecting a multi-year deal at an average of like $9 million a season. Yeah. So like I just talked about Seumalo, like kind of the same thing for Risner. I would jump at the opportunity to get a solid veteran to take the starting spot where I feel like John Runyon Jr. is very upgradable at this point, and then be able to really focus all of your time and effort on either, you know, Zach Tom at right tackle or Zach Tom at center and finding a new right tackle or whatever you need to do there, but really solidifying one of those two spots on the starting offensive line that we view as needs.
Yeah, if John Runyon Jr. is like your third guard and you can count on him to come in a pinch, I think you feel great about that. But I think you're in a place where I think, you know, what was he, a former sixth round pick? I think you have to entertain the option of improving that spot. I actually really like the Dalton Risner call. He's a name that I probably would have brought up if you didn't. He's a name I have my eye on as well. And I think for the Packers, I think there's no downside if you can fit it financially, right? That's the big question. And they're probably waiting to see how some of these things are going to fall. But correct me if I'm wrong, like the upside is you get a great player for maybe a year and then he can go out and prove himself. And if he signs a big contract, you're looking at a compensatory pick, right? So like there's some of that chess to it that like, you're like, oh, maybe he helps us out and he helps us out later with the comp pick. But I'm going to give you more of a position than just one name here. I would love to see the Packers add some defensive line help. And I know that this isn't a team that's going to be looking to add aging vets as they kind of rebuild a little bit this year. But I just think we've seen this team struggle on the defensive line. And luckily, Kenny Clark has been pretty healthy. But they need more talent. They need more bodies in there. And so I would love to see them add guys like Matt Ioannidis or Shelby Harris or A'shaun Robinson to give them a little bit of help against the run and to give Kenny and Devonta Wyatt some help in the interior. They let Jerron Reed go, and I totally get that. He got a pretty good payday from the Seahawks. But this draft class isn't stacked at the defensive line. And I don't think that I want them spending pick 15 on someone like Brian Brzee. And I just think that Mozzie Smith is probably going to go before pick 45. I just don't think you can bank on this class of defensive linemen being available. And I don't think you can bank on them being impact players early. I don't know that that's where the strength of the draft is. So I'd love to see them dip into this bargain bin of free agent defensive linemen. But like we close out each show with, I just think that that's going to be a spot that we want to make some improvements. So Dalton Risner, a good name to watch. Maybe look at some of this defensive lineman as well. Do you have that list, Andrew, Matt Ioannidis, or Shelby Harris or A'shaun Robinson? Do any of those guys, you know, jump out you more than any of the rest?
Yeah, I think Shelby Harris is probably the most intriguing, but probably comes with the highest price tag too.
Okay.
Like I really liked Matt Ioannidis for a while, all the way back to when he was coming out of Temple. A'shaun Robinson is a guy who has, I think, the ability to make a really big impact, a higher draft pedigree than the other two, and has been on some pretty good defensive lines. I don't know that he necessarily stands out, but like, sign me up. Any one of those three, that would be great. It'd be similar to the Jerron Reed move from last year, and I really like that. Like, get a veteran defensive lineman.
Yeah, I know Maggie's really into the Shelby Harris idea. A'shaun Robinson obviously has the draft pedigree of people loving him early in the draft, and just the Alabama thing. You know, I think there's a lot of upside with those guys to come in and be a great third or fourth defensive lineman for you. But anyway, let's tuck that aside. Let's do what we do best and what we love. Let's talk about the draft a little bit. We like to close out these shows with maybe some of our favorite prospects that we think that Packers fans should keep their eye on as we get a little bit closer to the draft. We are now, Andrew, I think 5 weeks away from the NFL draft here. So getting close, but who is your prospect to watch this week?
Yeah, I feel like this really snuck up on me. So I was looking through my list. I've done quite a few positions since the last time that we did this. And somebody that I wanted to talk about was Isaiah Foskey, the edge from Notre Dame. He came into the season as somebody you'd see mocked in the first round of many mock drafts. And he kind of fell off as the college season went on. But I really liked him as a day two edge rusher. Something the Packers may very well be in the market for. We just got done talking about Will McDonald, right? Foskey has a ton of juice in his game. He is Notre Dame's all-time leading sack holder. That came out wrong. He has more sacks than anybody else in Notre Dame history. He wins with a ton of burst, bend, and explosiveness. He's certainly not the strongest player, but effort and intelligence make up for a lot of that. And I wish he was more refined with the pass rush moves, as he can be a little bit too reliant on speed. He doesn't sacrifice run lanes to get upfield, but he's not the stoutest run defender. And like, his length definitely plays a role in that. He's a really good special teams player too. That's something that the Packers should certainly appreciate. Something I think they would get excited about. But Foskey reeks as somebody who's going to get drafted by the Ravens or Steelers or 49ers on day two. And then Kyle is laughing in the background, and I'm losing my focus completely. But no, like, Foskey to me, like, he just screams at somebody he's going to get picked by Baltimore, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, and then just develop into like an 8-10 sack a year kind of player. And he tested really well. He has a 9.32 RAS score, and he's going to be graded just 0.9 points behind Lucas Van Ness in my final grade. So he is a player I'd love to see. I'd love to see the Packers nab his edge rusher. We're going to have to pause this.
Okay.
Because I can't keep straight faces and talking. Right.
I'm going to gather myself.
All jokes aside, I think Foskey could be a starter for the Packers by 2024. So I really, really liked him.
Ooh, all right, I'm going to breathe through this. And I was muted for a good 45 seconds there because I couldn't compose myself. But I'm usually the one with those moments on this podcast. So I'm glad that you finally had yours. But I'm actually, seriously, I'm glad you mentioned Foskey. Now you get to mute yourself. I'm glad you mentioned Foskey, though, because I literally just watched him this week, and I liked him a lot more than I honestly thought that I would. And his interview was awesome. He's a high-character guy. He's a football IQ player. He's going to be great in your locker room. So I went in with like middle expectations, but I really, really liked Foskey. I also thought it was interesting that he blocked 4 punts as a special teams player at Notre Dame. So you're probably getting a developmental edge rusher who's your third or your fourth edge out of the gate, but who could make an immediate impact on special teams. You don't block 4 kicks. You don't block 4 punts on accident, right? That doesn't happen just, you know, this guy has some quick twitch and some athleticism to do those kinds of things. So I'd be fine with Foskey at pick 45, honestly. But I'm going to jump into my guy here, and that's DJ Turner, the corner from Michigan. He's 5'11". He's 178 pounds. So he's definitely a pretty light player. But this guy can fly. He ran a 4.26 at the combine, which is totally nuts. Unbelievable fast player. But you love that the speed isn't just linear. He's also got oily hips to change directions with ease. You don't always see those two things together. So, of course, you wish he was a little bit bigger, and big receivers do give him some trouble sometimes. So I think he's probably best suited to play in the slot in the NFL, for being honest. But it's interesting because that's a big projection, because the vast majority of his snaps at Michigan were outside. So I love his game, though. He plays with good technique. He's a smart player with above average instincts. He's super sticky in coverage. Size really is his biggest knock. He's got short arms. But just based on his film and what he does well, I actually have a borderline first round grade on Turner, which I know is really rich for a lot of people, but I really, really like the player, and I'd be fine if the Packers took him in the second round for sure.
I was just thinking about what I saw of DJ Turner, and I really liked him too. You and I were talking about that before the show. Do you think there's a little Sam Shields to his game?
Yeah. How tall? Sam was a pretty tall player, though, right?
He's about 6 foot.
Yeah, I felt like Sam was a lankier player and had a little bit more length, right? And I feel like the arms, I think Sam was a player who was always mixing it up at the catch point with the long arms getting in there. But the makeup speed, and we saw that on, you know, there's some famous highlights of Sam Shields. I think of the Dallas game where he undercuts a pass just because he has the makeup speed to run underneath the route of the receiver. I think you see a little bit of that with DJ Turner. And that makes total sense because, I mean, he runs a 4.26. So he has the long speed. He has the oily hips to change directions. But I think he also has the burst, which sometimes you don't always get that twitch even when you do have long speed. So I think he's a nice combination player. And obviously at 178, 179, that's going to be a hiccup for a lot of teams. But I just think when you're talking pure football player, DJ Turner is a pretty good prospect.
Yeah, I guess the way I was thinking about it was I see Turner as the kind of player who can overcome that weight.
Yeah.
Given all of the things that you talked about. And Sam Shields to me was a lot like that. And I am somebody who is, banging the table for Sam Shields as a UDFA and had to buy his jersey after year one because he was my favorite player on the team. So,
yeah.
Nothing but highly complimentary of DJ Turner, who I also will have as a first round grade. So I'm loving that you're on DJ Turner's bandwagon here.
Now listen to this though. We can't get out of the show. People are like, I thought you were wrapping up, but we got stuff to do here. The producer has just come up with some interesting information here. Sam Shields is listed on Wikipedia. I'm scrolling for other references, Pro Football Reference, 5'11". 178 pounds, Mr.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, I thought he was heavier than that, and I don't know what he played at. I guess I'm assuming that's what he played at later in his career, but that is literally what I read for DJ Turner at 5'11", 178. So maybe you're on to something there. Let's have a little fun with Sam Shields Packers comp.
Yeah, I think Shields probably had a little bit better ball skills. And yeah, arm length, I'm not totally sure. I trust your memory of that a little bit better than mine. But yeah, Turner's a guy that's super fun. So definitely somebody to watch out for. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about how the Packers could be in the quarterback market going forward. So that's fun. We got DJ Turner, we got Isaiah Foskey, and I think we got a lot to look forward to. So Andy sent out the tweet today that we are in full draft mode starting next week.
Yeah.
Keep tuned in to Packaday Podcast. Make sure that you're subscribed. Make sure that you're following us on Twitter at Packaday Podcast to get all of those updates. But that is all the time that we have for today. This has been the Packaday Podcast. You can find Kyle on Twitter at Packer_Pundit. And you can find me at Andrew Mertig. Please subscribe and rate the Packaday Podcast if you like what we're doing. You can catch Kyle and myself every Friday. And next week, we're going to be back with more draft coverage with huge announcement here.
Oh,
Maggie Loney returning
yeah.
full time to the Friday crew. So we're so excited about
really
that.
Excited.
Thanks to Maggie for pinch hitting for me last week. And super excited to get the trio back together. Thanks to you for listening. And remember, as always...